fans, wherever you may be, welcome inside the Hawks Playbook Podcast. Join your host, Bill Alfstead, and featuring Seahawks sports writer and football analyst, Keith Myers. Hey, Hawks fans, welcome back for another edition of the Hawks Playbook Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Alfstead, here, as always, with Keith Myers. Good afternoon, Keith.
Good afternoon, Bill. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty good. We just bought a house that's being built this last week, and we met with the construction supervisor guy, and he seems to think it's going to be done like a month early, which would tickle me to no end because I've got a transition time between the current place we're a short-term rental place we're in and getting in there. So anything that's early is a bonus. So pretty jazzed about that. The Seahawks played. We didn't win, but I thought there was some good showing sprinkled throughout. There seems to be a general feeling of disappointment out of that game. Yes, there were some disappointing things, but I don't think people should generally be disappointed. I think that the benefits outweigh the negatives. And as we approach the third game of preseason, we're really winding down out of preseason altogether. A week from today, Keith, is our final game against the Oakland Raiders, and then it'll be on to the regular season. So this thing's going to wrap up really quick. And so we've got just a ton to talk about today, and I'm super jazzed to be here and excited to start talking again. How's your week?
My week's been kind of weird. I after having about 8 weeks off this summer, it's part of being in this field, the education field. I am back at work, sitting through some of the most boring meetings you'll ever have to endure, but. You know, it's back at work and we're getting geared up for another year. So, it feels the timing's right. I'm getting geared up for a year of work and the Seahawks are getting geared up for the next season. And it's just it's that time of year. Yeah. Fall is rapidly approaching.
I just have always admired teachers. I just have, even when I was a kid and I was being taught, I still looked up to my teachers, figured that they were out there putting themselves out there and not getting paid very much, doing me a favor, basically, And today, watching my kids both grow up and go through the public school system and stuff, just some remarkable people and some teachers and definitely give a ton more than they take. And so hats off to you, brother. That's awesome. So let's go through it. The last week, Seahawks preseason. So we faced off against the Minnesota Vikings on the road. General impressions, Keith.
I thought that the game just kind of lacked energy once the starters went out. It was really hard to go back and get a good feel for the defensive players. They just didn't have that energy. They didn't have that fire they had the week before. And so it was harder for me to like really dive in, because, were the players slow or was it just a general,
malaise
by the whole team? Like, was it the flight or that kind of stuff that nobody seemed to be moving fast. And, that was very different than a week ago.
Oh, and I thought conversely on the offense, the first string offensive line looked great. We'll talk about this a little bit later in the show. The second, third, fourth string guys just did not look good. And so it made it difficult for the quarterbacks to have any connection or any rhythm. Paxton Lynch came in, looked worse than he did before. Some of that was on the offensive line. Some of that was on him. Some of that may have been on the receivers and route running, et cetera. Don't know that for sure. But they weren't able to, we weren't able to evaluate like running backs. We weren't able to evaluate wide receivers after Russell Wilson left the game. And so that made it hard on offense to do that. And so, Yeah, you're right. I made a comment on Twitter. I was like, man, the energy level in this game is just awful. And I just want it to end because crazy.
Yeah, you bring up like the offensive line play and trying to evaluate Paxton Lynch, but try there is this screaming, like, you know, mob on Twitter that's like criticizing Rashad Penny this week.
Yeah,
because,
I don't get it.
Because he was getting tackled before he touched the ball. He had six runs, but on four of those six runs, he literally had a guy in his face.
Yeah. And one of the runs that he did have a little bit of space, I thought he made a really nice move. Yeah, I thought he made a really nice move in space and got an extra 4 or 5 yards there. And another one, it was okay. And the other ones, he just really had a chance. Now, he did catch a ball or two out of the backfield, which I thought was good. But nonetheless, you're right. The critics are storming after him. And, I don't get it. I don't buy into it. I'm not that guy. I get it. But you got to look a little deeper into it. Like, what's going on? When you have six attempts, you can't judge somebody by six attempts. Look at what he did last year. Look at the body of work he brought into it from last year. Improved all the way through the season. Came into the season, lost some weight, got in better condition, and has just really struggled behind what really is a second, third string offensive line. When he gets touches, that hasn't really given him a lot of space to work with. And quite frankly, Penny does need a little space to work with. He just does. He's a guy that operates better in space than he does between the tackles. It doesn't mean he's a terrible between the tackles runner. I'd like to see him with the first string offensive line do that. And then let's see where he's at. Let's give him another year. Let's give him a chance to actually be the best that he can be. And I just don't think that he's, you can necessarily judge that after a couple of preseason games.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, Pete Carroll coming out and saying that he thought Penny did really well. And that what they're looking at is clearly not what the fans are looking at, because, you know, they want to see him, basically complete his assignments, do what he can, not fumble the ball when he's getting tackled as he gets the handoff, which he good ball security and stuff there. I thought, you know, so Pete Carroll was like, no, we were impressed with what we saw, even though the stats didn't show much. And I think that it does to me show that Penny, I think, is getting falsely criticized more for his draft position than his play. If Penny had been taken in the second or third round, I don't think anyone would care. But he was a first round pick, and so everyone just expects him to be basically, if he not they don't, not that they expect him to be great, but if he's not Ezekiel Elliott great, then he's trash because he's a first round pick. And I think that he didn't get a chance to control where his draft slot was. John Snyder did. And we need to make sure that we're not criticizing Penny for John Snyder's selection. You know what I mean?
Correct.
And if we really evaluate Penny on, you know, for what he's doing, he is fighting through trying to play behind some of the worst run blocking that you'll see in the NFL. And that's really what happened this last week against Minnesota.
Yeah, so let's just give it another game, folks, and let's give it a season. In fact, let's just kind of feel this out, see where we go. You know, we've still got one of the best rushing attacks in the NFL. A Penny's going to be awesome, and I tweeted out later this afternoon before we went on. I said, you know, before it's all said and done, there's going to be a moment where we're going to need Penny. He's going to be the guy. And I think that he's going to come through. I just do. I get the feeling that, you know, given the opportunity, given the reps, given the volume that I think that he needs in this system, that he would come through. That's just a feeling I have. Okay. So what I thought we'd do with the Minnesota game, instead of just evaluating all the plays and all that kind of stuff, we'll just kind of go through the winners and losers of that game, justifiably so or unjustifiably. That's just kind of the, and it's my list. Keith didn't have anything to do with this. We're just going to go over my list. You can kind of have input as you see fit, and we'll just go from there. Winners. I put Puna Ford right at the very top. He was the first guy that came to mind, and man, Keith, he looks good. He's your guy from like
my
back. Yeah.
It's funny because, the Puna Hive on Twitter is, It's gaining members every week. People are starting to really take notice of how dominant this guy is, and he just takes over. You know, the centers,
God, the
just
leverage that he has is crazy.
Centers don't have a hope of blocking him. They have to double team him, or he's going to just drive the guy into the backfield. And I mean,
that's good news for Bobby Wagner, man.
Yeah, it's just pure domination is what you're getting out of him. And for him to go out there against a good team and just lay it down and say, I'm the best player
on the field.
Or at least I'm the best player in the trenches on either team.
Yeah.
Out of our defensive line versus their offensive line, you know, all of those nine players that are on the field right now, I'm the best of that group, and it's clear on the tape. You're right. He was a huge winner.
So the play where he stripped the ball out of the running back, who did not have forward momentum, by the way, that was clearly a fumble. And that was a tremendous play by Punafor. I mean, that was just like perfect. And then when you envision him being paired with Reed there, eventually, unfortunately, we're going to have to wait 6 weeks into the regular season to make that happen. But when those guys are paired together on the same interior line, man, that's a really nice tandem for the Seahawks. Now, they're going to have to figure out if they want to pay Reed going forward, but have a guy like Puna Ford there too. And it sounds like, and it looks like Puna Ford's going to get enough penetration on passing downs that they could possibly leave him in there, and he could really start to disrupt passing lanes and possibly get some quarterback hits. I mean, I'm just, you know, thinking about it. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it looks like it definitely could happen, Keith.
Yeah, I'm just, we went into this, you know, training camp, preseason year, all of this with questions about the defensive line. We still have questions about the defensive line, but there you can start to see, you know, the glimmer of hope at defensive tackle there with Ford and then Reed coming back. And yeah, I mean, there's some good stuff to like starting about, you know, week six when they get, or week seven when they get Reed back.
And Al Woods look good too. I mean, that guy's a big, big guy. He's the biggest guy out there on the Seattle defense. And I thought he does a really good job on slowing down the run as well. Now, he's not going to probably give you a ton upfield trying to chase quarterbacks around, but those guys stopping the run, I think we've actually improved or have the potential to have improved going into the season. So another guy, Deshaun Shedd, he just keeps showing up and making plays. And, you know, he's one of those guys where I thought, well, he's a bubble guy. They'd bring him in. He's, you know, he could potentially be a roster cut. Now I'm looking at him as kind of one of those guys that's steadying the ship, guys that he's helping mentor some of the younger guys in that secondary unit, Keith. And then he shows up and makes plays, four tackles, an interception with a pick six.
Mm-hmm. He also got beat a couple times.
So did everybody back
but,
there.
But everyone, yeah, you're right. But I'm just saying, like, he did. It wasn't like this was a game where you can say, man, he just stood out as being great. He made a bunch of plays, but he also got beat a couple times. So I think we need to maybe dial it back a little bit. But the pick six was great because it just showed he's got a nose for the ball. He made a great
and his
jump.
Knees all the way back.
Oh, yeah. When he left the team, it wasn't that he wasn't a good player here. It was just unfortunate timing that he was going to basically miss most of a year with the knee injury, and he didn't have a contract, and the Seahawks needed a guy that they could count on right then, and they were short on cap space, so they couldn't pay him to stick around. But now he's healthy. And if he's healthy and he's the guy he was before the injury, then he's a veteran corner / safety that they can count on to be good. And that's what they kind of need right now, because the secondary does not look good. So,
well, let's stick with the secondary and let's just talk about some guys. Now, I have my winners list, and we can talk about the loser guys later. They're still part of the Seahawks, so they're just temporary guys. Jamar Taylor. So Jamar Taylor, now I've never really been impressed with Taylor. He seems like he's always just kind of one of those guys that fills a need, doesn't really stand out, does his, you know, brings his lunch pail, does his work, and then goes home. Nothing spectacular, but he doesn't hurt you tremendously, at least in a Pete Carroll style defense where he's charged with keeping everything up front. I think that's probably his best fit. Now there's talk that he'll start versus the Chargers in that nickel spot. Last week, Pete Carroll gave that nod to Oh, who did he give that nod to, Keith?
Reed.
Kalen Reed. He gave the nod to Kalen Reed last week. Last week, Kalen Reed only ended up with six defensive snaps or something like that. Six or eight defensive snaps, which was odd.
He got the start, but he didn't play much. And I was like, did he get hurt? But then I looked at the injury list after the game and he wasn't listed on there. And it was like, that was definitely odd.
That's like some doghouse stuff going on there. So Jamar Taylor. So I thought he was a winner in that game against Minnesota. He didn't do anything spectacular again, but he was probably the best player out of the secondary during the game.
Yeah. I thought he did okay. I mean, when he was playing with the ones early, I thought he did pretty well. And then later in the game, he was still in there. And with the backups, you know, after halftime, and then he started to like miss some reads and have some start. Like I said, everybody in the secondary did. So I'm not like trying to pick on an individual guy. It made me wonder if the communication wasn't there, or if he was expecting guys to be in places they weren't, or what, because he definitely looked better early with the ones than he did later with the backups.
So here's another, here's a trio of defensive guys. The last one's on my winners list. Let me know what you think. Austin Calatro, Tedrick Thompson, and Ugo Amadi. I thought all didn't hurt themselves in this game. Didn't completely stand out, but were really pretty solid.
Yeah, I continue to watch, Tedrick Thompson to see what he's going to do and if he's actually going to play to his talent level, something he hasn't done for the last couple of years. And he continues to not be the terrible Tedrick that we've come to expect after the last 2 years and just be serviceable, and that's a major improvement for him. I didn't think he was good, but he certainly wasn't bad, and that is an improvement for him. Calatro continues to be a workhorse this preseason, where they're playing him a lot. He's playing in multiple positions, which is why he plays a lot, because he's getting snaps at all three linebacker positions with different groups. And he continues to play pretty well. You can tell his instincts are good. Yeah. His knowledge of the defense and the scheme are really good.
I don't know how he does not make the team. I mean, I originally had him off my roster on the 53, Keith, just because I was trying to make room for Mingo. I was trying to make room for Griffin. I was trying to make room for Martin and Ben Burkervin. Mm-hmm. And I think Burkervin is sliding and Calatro is ascending.
I think Calatro is pretty much a lock, along with the starting. Basically, he's the fifth linebacker, and I probably keep five. I think the linebacker core is pretty much set unless there's a major injury to the top five. And yes, that does leave Griffin off, unless he makes it as a special teamer or they keep a sixth linebacker or that kind of stuff. But I believe that the linebacker position is probably the most set of any position group on the team right now. And Calatro's in there. Definitely.
Griffin hasn't been able to play. So he was injured before this game and he's still not able to practice right now because of a knee, a bruised knee. That's tough for him. Mm-hmm. Because this is do or die time, and he's not able to be out there. Now, if they cut him, Keith, he is eligible for the practice squad. The question is, do 31 other teams take a pass? You can certainly make the argument that he hasn't done enough for any one of 31 teams to make him put him on their roster. So I think that he starts the season on the practice squad and maybe gets picked off, maybe doesn't later on.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see, because if you go back to the first preseason game, he was a standout on special teams. Like, he was the guy who made the opening kickoff play, where he was the first one down there and made a sure tackle. True. And the team is looking for special team standouts. It's always something they look for, whether it be, you know, him and, you know, Nico Thorpe stuck around forever.
So do they want to put him on the injured list then? I mean, with that bruised knee, are they holding him out on purpose?
I don't know. I mean, that might be something because it's a bruise. Like, it's not like he tore something right. or whatever. It's just a bruise. They may be saying, they may be hiding him because they kind of get a feel like he's not going to make the roster. And so they're like, okay, he's injured for now. And they're just going to hide him and have him sit and not make an impression. So that way they can slide him through onto the practice squad. Because
his name is not going to slide through.
You don't think so?
I think he'll be a national story that he didn't make the Seahawks the second season.
True. But at the same time, like, has he earned a spot? Like, has he earned an opportunity?
No.
I
he has not earned a spot.
See, I don't think so. But at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if a team that needs attention, that needs positive stories about them, like Tampa, for instance, would pick him up just to be like, hey, you know, we're giving this guy a shot. He's only got one hand, blah, blah, blah. And I hope he would take advantage of that opportunity and play awesome. I think he will. But, you know, as far as from a Seahawk point of view, I would like to see Griffin stick around. I think there's a lot of untapped potential there.
I do, too.
And he just needs to continue grinding and continue getting better. I actually think he'll make the team for the special teams, and two, because the Seahawks recognize that the story of the Griffin twins is big enough that they aren't going to end it right now. They'll wait. This may be his last year with the team, but I think he makes the roster or ends up on IR some way that he's still with the team this remaining season.
So next week, I'm just talking out loud with you, Keith, and trying to plan our next show. Are we doing a kind of a roster prediction show at all? Or are we just going to skip over that and do a regular season preview show after the next game? Like, what's next week's show going to be?
Well, so this week's show or this week's game is the big dress rehearsal, right? We're going to see more of the starters in that game than in the other three preseason games combined. And so I think we'll be able to talk a lot about what this team looks like. We should have a really good idea coming out of that game. Who the top 60 guys are, and then have, you know, seven. We know that there's gonna be seven of those that are going to get cut. And so there's probably 15 maybe that are on the bubble, and they're going to take seven out of that 15. And I think really looking at that group of people is where it's worth spending some significant time on, because that's what the team is spending their significant time on.
Sounds like we got one teed up. Okay, so let's switch to the offensive side of the ball. So I got to start with Chris Carson. Well, you can start with Wilson as well. Wilson had a great game passing the ball.
He was sharp.
He had time. He had protection. He looked sharp. I was going to mention this in my general observation segment, so I'm going to save Russell Wilson for that. Chris Carson, 5 carries, 25 yards. Not spectacular, but decent. And he looks like a load. Like, when he's coming at you and he wants to hit you before he goes out of bounds, that's like a Pete Carroll running back right there.
Oh yeah, Carson looks good. He's ready to go.
I don't even want to play him in this game.
I'm surprised they gave him as many touches as they did. I figured they would just be like, okay, he looks good, get him out. let's keep him healthy. You know, and but he looks ready to go. He's ready. But more importantly, with that was the people in front of them, both with Wilson and with Carson. The starting 5 offensive linemen played really well. Wilson had time to sit back and survey the field. Carson was able to, you know, get to the line quickly with a hole to run through. The whole group is playing well. That includes Ifedi at right tackle. There's been a lot of questions about now for 3 straight seasons, but he's looked good. And perhaps more importantly, at least from my point of view, is at left guard, where Ethan Posick, who, you know, we kind of had written him off that maybe he just wasn't going to have an NFL career. He's really shown that he's done the work this last offseason to add the functional strength, the core strength that he needed to hold up on the interior. And has looked really good, better in pass protection than in run blocking. But you know what? He looks pretty good in both. And that's kind of a surprise because we were talking about them getting Hayes an opportunity to show if he belongs in the starting lineup. And Hayes has been injured. Posick's had an opportunity, and Posick's taken 100% of that opportunity and just ran with it, made a huge impact. You want to talk about a winner, winners and losers? Ethan Posick's probably one of the bigger winners you're going to find on offense.
Well, he's on my list. Absolutely. You know, that offensive line of Brown, Posick, Britt, Fluker, Effetti. You know what that offensive line now is? It's a veteran offensive line.
It is.
And they're playing like it. Like they're playing with the grit that a veteran line demands that they play with. You know, they don't let each other down. They don't let each other fail or fail the same way twice. They, you know, get behind each other. They support each other. It's a good group. It's solid. I mean, that's one thing I can say about the group right now is it's solid. Now, behind those guys,
it's a mess.
It's a mess, and it started out looking really good, Keith. Before camp started, we were talking about one of the strengths of this team would have been the tackle and guard group. Overall, it looked like we had some of the best depth we'd ever had at offensive line, and injuries, and we're going to talk about injuries, because I think there's so many injuries that are impacting the roster. I think it definitely we need to talk about it a little bit. But when you go down the list of guys behind those starters, and Ipati's in there as well, Posick Ipati, you take a look at everyone that's injured and out and done for, or you know, impacted as to when they're available. And we've had to bring guys in we've never even heard of now, street free agent guys, just to complete the preseason. It's tough. I mean, it's tough out there, and that it makes evaluating like the wide receiver group that's 12 receivers deep or 10 or whatever it is. It makes it evaluating those guys really difficult because quarterbacks don't have time to get the ball out there. So I agree. Ethan Posick, winner. Travis Homer, another running back, 4 carries, 16 yards. He looks like a guy that can have an impact this year, Keith. I think he makes the team. He's seemingly on the roster bubble, but I think every time he shows up and plays in games, we're seeing a guy that's probably going to hang around.
Yeah, because who is going to take that third running back spot away from him? I mean, honestly, like, look at the rest of the options.
The similar runner, if you really think about it, is Procise. Procise has the ability, when healthy, to be able to run between the tackles on a pinch, and he kind of gets that outside edge and turns the corner and is a good receiver out of the backfield. Travis Homer's kind of the same sort of thing. He can run between the tackles for you if he needs to. He can squeak out those yards. He's an excellent pass catcher. He's good in pass pro.
How many snaps did Procise have in this game?
Procise was a healthy scratch. He was on the sidelines. He was available, ready to play, and didn't take a snap. Ouch.
So what does that tell you about where the team values him at this point?
Here's my thought. Like, Pete Carroll put on his pre-crime visor and decided that Procise was going to get injured in that game and actually saved him. Saved him from the injury that he was going to get.
Saved him from himself.
Sorry, that was horrible, by the way.
If you
that
cannot,
was probably one of the worst things I've ever said on this show.
If you can't trust a guy to not get hurt in a preseason game when he's fighting for his job, do you trust him to be a guy you can play in the regular season? Especially if, you know, Carson goes down?
Let me ask you this. Why? Maybe they should do him a favor and cut him after the third preseason game, Keith. They have a few other areas where they could probably add a guy or two to their 90 for that last game. Give Procise an extra week to be out there, see if he can catch on with another team. I don't know. That's just me, but you know.
I mean, I look at this group and I go, okay, who, you know, the top two are set. I think Ballore, even though he played one snap, didn't he? At fullback, I think he's going to make the team just for the short yardage, goal line kind of stuff. And then who's the last running back? And you got, okay, yeah. So you got.
No, well, you're not going to keep McKissick probably because, and Bo Scarborough, right?
Yeah, you got Scarborough, Turner, and McKissick, Procise and Homer. Those are your options.
Yeah, I would keep four guys, because I want to keep six wide receivers.
Yeah.
So I would go with Homer, and then I would go with J.D. McKissick probably.
See, I think that you keep the top two, Ballore, And yeah, I keep Ballore because I think you need a fullback in this offense in short yardage goal line situations. And Ballore also gives them some emergency depth that linebacker should.
Well, and he's a special team standout.
Yeah. And so you've got a guy that can do a lot of different things. I think he makes it. And so I think you have those three and then you pick up one more. And so you've got, it really comes down to me to a choice between McKissick and Homer. Whereas, you know, McKissick just for the last year and a half struggled to be healthy. And, you know, I don't think he played in this game. Did he?
No, he was out. He's back in practice, as of, today or Wednesday. Coach said that both Procise and McKissick would play against the Chargers.
Okay. And we'll see, but at this point, Homer has shown that he can be both a third down back and should need a rise because of injuries and everything, also be a first and second down back and run between the tackles. And, you know, McKissick is a great receiver out of the backfield, probably the best in the position group, but he isn't a guy that's going to run well between the tackles. So I think you keep the more versatile guy, even though in the passing game, McKissick's probably the more dangerous guy. So, you know, it's going to be hard because if you keep an extra back so you can keep both of them, then you lose a wide receiver. And this is a wide receiver group that I think you need to keep an extra body.
So I got a trio of guys, including one that didn't even play that won on offense here. Jerron Brown, John Ursua, your guy again. Mm-hmm. I applaud you for that, for recognizing talent where talent is ahead of the group. And then Geno Smith. Smith won for just not playing and being available this week.
Yeah.
So Jerron Brown, 2 catches, 52 yards. He looked decisive in his routes. I want to talk a little bit later about the rapport that Russell Wilson has there and the type of routes and play calling that I'm seeing from Schottenheimer. I think is really going to benefit a guy like Jerron Brown this year. Maybe that's why they've been talking about him in the offseason so much, is they've recognized that they're going to install some more of the offense, and he would be a big part of that. So hats off to him. He kind of came through there. And then Ursua. Now, he had 1 catch for 25 yards, but it was really nice. And then he had what I thought was an even more important play for him in this offense and his future with the team, is he had a kind of an end around Percy Harvin type play where he had the carry for 11 yards. I thought that was telling in the way that the team would like to be able to use him this year.
Well, I mean, Ursula, it's 2 touches, right? He had 1 catch and 1 carry. But you look what he did with those. When he gets the ball in his hands, whether it be his catch or the run, he looks electric. He's got that sudden start, stop. Like, he changes direction faster than anyone else on the field. And it's obvious. And you can do a lot with that. There was a point in the second half when the offense was doing nothing and they couldn't do anything, where you kind of got the feeling, you're like, just throw the ball to Ursula and let him do stuff. Because even if it's a 2-yard catch, he has a chance of taking that 2-yard catch and turning it into an 8 to 10 yard gain, because he can make people miss more than in anyone else.
And we just don't have anybody else like that on the team at all.
Yeah. And so to me, he stood out. I'm willing to admit there's a little bit of confirmation bias there, because I recognize the skill set and I keep trying to get other people to notice the skill set there. So of course I'm looking for him to do good things, but what I saw, I liked. So I'm willing to roll with that. And you're right about Geno Smith, man. The best thing that happened for him was, one, he only had to miss one game because of the knee cyst that he had removed. He'll be back this week, available and playing. So that helped. And the guy that he might have been worried would be ready to step up and challenge him for that quarterback two job didn't play well. Just looked inaccurate, looked slow, had a hard time running the offense with any kind of pace. It just, it was not, it was a sloppy game from Paxton
Lynch.
Well, and
Lynch, I wrote Paxton Lynch down at the top of my list of losers. And I want to clarify, okay, this isn't because of the concussion situation. That was a horrible situation, a horrible play. Rightly fined their player and booted him out, Holton Hill. Just a terrible situation. It, even if he didn't hit Paxton Lynch in the helmet, that was still targeting because he put his the crown of his helmet down. Even if he would have hit him in the chest, it still would have been a ejectable type foul. Mm-hmm. 6 for 15, though, before that, 67 yards, looked completely disjointed. Now, you got to give Minnesota credit. They've got a heck of a defense.
They do.
And some of that came early, like in the second, mid-second quarter and early third quarter. And it just didn't look, he just didn't look good. You know, it was, mm-hmm. and it went kind of with the team. The team just didn't look good. The offensive line at that point didn't look good. The running backs at that point didn't look good. You know, Rashad Penny, you know, the whole thing just kind of employed it a little bit for the Seahawks. They stopped driving. They stopped scoring. We lost the game. The other guy, JT Barrett, 0 for 3, 0 yards. Yeah, let's just go from there. Okay, I had Rashad Penny. Now, granted, we'd spent a little bit of time up front talking about Penny, how we're not holding this against him and everything. He's still a loser in this game. 6 carries, negative 2 yards. He did have 2 receptions for 10 yards. So let's turn it into a positive there. Keenan Reynolds. I thought he was a loser in this game only because he had an opportunity to be part of the return game. And he looked passive to me. Like he looked like a guy that didn't want to be aggressive and be dynamic. And he has that ability. Like in open field, when you give him the ball, he's pretty jukey. I mean, he likes to make guys miss, and he's kind of small and active and fast and quick. And I didn't see any of that from him in the return game.
Yeah, he had a real impressive return in the first preseason game. And then when given an option to add to that and really just, you know, show that that's what he's going to be, he didn't. He looked like he was indecisive and didn't know where he wanted to go with the ball when he got it in his hands. And I thought that was kind of an unimpressive. And the other thing is that because of just the way the wide receiver position was with the different injuries and people going out, whatever, he had a chance to show that he belonged as a slot receiver, which is one of the other places where he's competing to try and make the team. And it just felt like he didn't show up there either. Whereas Ursua, you know, kind of made the most of his opportunities. Reynolds just kind of slid and disappeared. And to me, that was really disappointing. I wanted him to step up
almost have to throw this game out for the receivers because of the quarterback play and the line play and stuff. It's just really hard to evaluate properly these guys. I mean, Keenan Reynolds probably didn't even get a ball thrown his way. He could have been open or not. Paxton Lynch probably would have missed him. You know, it's just one of those things. A couple of linemen on my list. Elijah Nakasa, tackle. Mm-hmm. Played left tackle after Duane Brown went out, and it just got horrible for the offensive line there. I didn't see him do anything good.
He played more offensive snaps than anybody else on the team, though there were 2 other players that played the same number, 38. And he was the guy that last year was kind of added late in the year off the street or off the practice squad, actually got in the game and played 1 or 2 snaps at right tackle.
Yeah, I think we had a scoring play when he went in one time. Chris Carson.
He's got that, like, he was around the team last year. He actually played, even though it was only a couple of snaps. So you kind of thought he might be a guy that would anchor in, you know, kind of that backup tackle spot, especially with Fant injured. And, you know, we know he's going to be the swing tackle at some point, but he got a chance to come in and show, and it didn't go well for him. It just was not a good showing. It was really kind of disappointing because I kind of expected more from him.
Do you remember Odhiambo?
Yep.
That's what he looked like. It was kind of, ugh. How about Demetrius Knox, Keith? So I thought he looked solid in the preseason. He wasn't spectacular, likely to be a practice squad candidate. Wasn't going to make the 53 at guard, undrafted rookie free agent out of Ohio State. He had Pete Carroll described as a devastating quad near the knee injury. He's out for the year now on IR. That's tough for him. Tough for the Seahawks.
That's bad because he, you know, of...
So he could have been a guy you pulled up like halfway through the year.
Yeah. And he could have been what Jordan Roos was a couple years ago, what Nakasa was last year, a guy you bring up midseason when there's some depth concerns and you kind of work him in and gets a chance to become a member of the team. And maybe even if he doesn't make the roster in Seattle the next year, he earns himself a job on another team where he can get some playing time. He was kind of in a position to have that be his career path. And he's out for the year. Just, I thought it was a torn quad that needed surgery.
Very well could be,
But I don't know the specifics. I don't even know where that came from, whether it was just an assumption by me or something that I read at some point. But it's one of those things. It was bad enough that it needs surgery and he's out. And that's devastating. So was he a loser in this game? Yeah, because he got hurt seriously and that's never a win. But it's not his fault as far as, you know, being the loser there. I feel terrible for the guy. I thought he had a chance to do some good things.
Couple of defensive ends I thought were on the losing end here. Rasheem Green. He's been given every opportunity to come in and make his mark, look spectacular, make a tackle behind the line of scrimmage, get a sack, anything at all. He had three tackles in kind of another unspectacular performance, I thought. Jacob Martin, similar situation, didn't impact the passing game at all. Had one tackle. I saw him drop back into coverage a couple times and get burned in coverage, which was a little concerning to me because they're going to ask him to do that once in a while. He looked like Cassius Marsh from his rookie season. That's what he reminded me of in that Minnesota game. I just thought it was a little bit of a regress for him. I hope he bounces back. That's it for the defensive ends there. Any comments on those two guys?
If you think back to last year, Rasheem Green dominated in the preseason because his athletic ability, you could tell he was unrefined and needed to work on technique, but his athletic ability stood out and he played really well. And then once the season came around, the combination of injuries and lack of technique, just kind of meant he didn't show up on the field. Like he just didn't show up in the box score anywhere. But I expected, you know, it's not like the athletic ability's gone. He's healthy now. And hopefully he got a year's worth of technique improvement. This should be when he's making his impact and really starting to stand out. And it felt like he was better last year. And so I don't know whether that is what the team is asking him to do is different or that kind of thing, but I really want him to stand out and show that he
it
belongs.
It seems, Keith, like they're asking their base defensive end, which is what he is, to take a position and hold it. So he's allowing it. Now this is just me. It seems like he's allowing the defense or the offensive tackle to get into his body and just kind of stay there waiting for the running back lane to come by him, you know, to reach out and make an arm tackle or whatever. He doesn't feel like they're asking him to push like into the backfield. Now that could be a situation where they're trying to evaluate other players around him or they're not trying to give anything away scheme wise for the regular season. And so they're having him kind of, and it's just me, an observation, just holding a position on the field and not moving off of that mark. So And I don't know that they would ask their base defensive ends to typically do that, but maybe they're asking him to do that. I don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting that you said, talked about Martin, because I was thinking, I'm like, I don't think he played that much. Like, I'm like, I know you're saying he's a loser because whatever.
I didn't look at snap counts for him.
I'm looking at him right now. He played 26 snaps on defense.
He had one tackle.
And I would have guessed it was half that. So he was out there a bunch and didn't really make an impact. So you're totally right.
Minnesota is not known for their offensive line either.
Also true. Although I do think it's going to be better this year. Just being fair.
Loser. And this is, he's not, when I say these things, I'm not, you know, trying to be demeaning. Ben Burkervin had four tackles. Ben Burkervin is a guy that needed to have a spectacular game. He needed to make some big plays. He needed to bat down a pass in coverage. He needed to have some special teams tackles or impact some plays there. Four tackles is solid, but I don't know if it's enough to make the roster. And that's why I'm putting him in this category.
It's really hard for him because he's looking up at five really good players above him. We know who the three starters are. They've all looked, you know, they are one of the best linebacking groups in the NFL. Cody Barton and Calitro have both looked really good too, and versatile. They can both play all three positions,
and they play special teams.
Yes, and so just the combination of their versatility and everything, like, it's pretty safe to say those are the five guys that are going to make the team. I think, like I said earlier, this is the, of all the position groups on the team, I believe linebacker is the most set. And barring injury, it's going to be hard for Ben Burkervin to make the roster, not because of anything he's done, but because of the just quality of talent above him on the depth chart.
So quickly, a few others. Akeem King. He had six tackles. Hey, he had six tackles. He must have played great. Vikings completed 5 of 5 passes against him, and he had allowed a passer rating of 28.9, or not 28.9. He had a passer evaluation rating from Pro Football Focus of 28.9, a preseason low for any defensive back in the NFL.
Yeah, that was not good. And that was coming off a game in which he looked like he was going to be versatile and play well and do okay. And so you're thinking, I think last week at this point, I was saying I thought maybe he would win basically the job to be the outside guy in the nickel, and that Griffin would slide inside. But you have that kind of performance. That was bad enough.
Everyone was bad, Keith. Everyone.
Yes.
So the starting corners, Griffin and Flowers, both allowed big plays. Griffin allowed that play on the sideline over the top. He allowed a receiver to get over the top of him. And then Griffin or Flowers had that long pass interference play that set up a field goal. That was a tough play. Some years you get away with that, where he grabs the receiver's arm. Some years you don't. He should have probably made that play without grabbing him. And he had an opportunity to. He played the ball. He looked at the ball. He knocked the ball down. I thought it was a great play overall. He just got caught. So I'm going to move on because that was pretty much the list anyway. I want to talk about injuries a little bit and how they impact the roster. I'm just going to go through these fairly quickly. Phil Haynes is one of the biggest injuries on the team that nobody's talking about because the guy just hasn't had an opportunity yet in preseason. He had a sports hernia surgery before training camp even started. He's been out. Apparently he's starting to move and run and so forth, but he's not quite ready yet. He seems like kind of a natural PUP list kind of guy, but given all the other injuries to the offensive line, they may want him and may in fact need him to be available. Even if he's not available in the first game or two, they may elect to not put him on the list and wait until after week six. They may decide to have him not suit up for the first couple games, but be on the roster. Phil Haynes, that's a name to watch. Mike Upati, again, he's nursing this, that, and the other. Same old story with him. Jordan Simmons had a knee scope apparently a couple weeks back. That's why he hasn't been available at all. George Fant, we know about him with the ankle. He is expected back around the first game. So hopefully we can have him back. Jamarco Jones, same sort of thing, nicked up here and there a little bit. Will Disley, he's back out there today, Thursday, 100% for the first time out there today, practicing full speed, and should be playing in the game on Saturday night. DK Metcalf had that little knee surgery, looked like a scope to me, although the details are not out there. They didn't find a lot, according to Pete Carroll, and Pete Carroll is expecting him back before the season starts. Amara Darbo, he's expected to play this week. Amara who? After being injured with a variety of different things for the last couple weeks. CJ Procise, another guy that's had, I don't know what, Keith. It's like the 10th or 11th injury since he was drafted. He's supposed to play this week. Bo Scarborough has been nicked up. I think he's a go. Paxton Lynch is still under concussion protocol. This list just keeps going. Ed Dixon. Ed Dixon had a knee and may not be ready for the first part of the season. His job is in jeopardy, but if Jacob Hollister doesn't come along, then maybe Ed Dixon sticks. Hollister, again, has got a groin strain. It was funny. Hollister had an interview, and I can't remember where the interview was. I think it was one of the radio stations. Says he thinks he runs a sub-4.5 40, Keith. I mean, to that have that nice guy. So if you had Hollister and Ferguson and Metcalf, all his red zone kind of guys, I mean, that would be a huge team.
How do you match up against that when you got three guys that are over 6'5"?
And all run the sub-4.5.
And all run. Like, there's no team in the league that has the bodies to match up against that. So, I mean, that's crazy.
Hail Mary City.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep going on this list, and then we can talk about some just general observations. Demetrius Knox is out for the season. So therefore we have Phil Haynes, Mike Upati, Jordan Simmons, George Fant, Jamarco Jones, Demetrius Knox, all in varying degrees of issues. And with all those guys healthy, plus our starters, we had a really decent depth offensive line unit this year, but man, some of those guys are going to come back. We did go out and sign Landon Turner and Brian Wallace off the street this week just to fill in to take snaps in the rest of the preseason.
I will say that one of the losers from this last game that we didn't talk about that we probably should have is Mike Lupati, because every time that he is ineligible to play because of this injury, he hasn't even practiced yet. And
you want to know what the crazy thing is, Keith? Pete Carroll had a news conference today. Pete Carroll talked about Mike Upati and Posick today. He was glowing about Posick, but he said, if Upati can come back, he's the guy. He's my guy. So even after all that, he's still better than Posick.
You start, like I said, every day that Posick's out there grinding with the team and getting his work in and looking good doing it, which he has in both these first two preseason games, and Lupati's yet to practice.
He hasn't practiced since the first week.
Yeah. So every day that this continues, Lupati's a loser and Posick's a winner, and the job becomes harder and harder to give to Lupati. If he came back today or tomorrow,
This was the regular season, it would be Posick's job to lose. But it's still preseason, so now it's, Demetrius Knox, again, he's out. J.D. McKissic, he's back this week after having, what was it McKissic had, Keith? I think it was an ankle or something. He's back playing this week. Reed is suspended the first six games, so I'm counting him as injured and just out. Ziggy Ansah, I don't even have an update yet, like where he's at, other than I think Pete mentioned it a couple weeks ago that he's working out and building strength and all of Pete-isms that he's talked about. So who knows where Ziggy Ansah is, but we need him.
He's still on pace to, from what I heard, he is still on pace to be available and on the field week one of the regular season.
And if that's awesome. True, they would ease him back. So he would take 10 snaps the first game, 20 snaps the second, et cetera. Mm-hmm. LJ Collier, he was back on the practice field today running and doing some walkthroughs and so forth, not quite ready to put full strength or step off of it with any power yet. But it made it seem as though he was 2 weeks away. He would be available around the first game. Shaquem Griffin is still out with a bruised knee. We talked about that earlier. Maybe they're trying to hide him. Bobby Wagner with the knee. He was a go in practice, so we'll see if he gets any playing time in this game. I wouldn't expect it. Marquise Blair, back spasm, still day-to-day. Lano Hill was back at it for the first time since his offseason hip surgery. He was back in action this week in practice, likely to see some time in the game on Saturday night. Naz Jones, knee. Carroll addressed it today, said he's got this knee thing. He's not quite right. It's seemingly timely for Naz Jones that maybe they're trying to put him on some sort of injured list as well. So just some names to watch. Observation time. We're getting close to an hour, Keith, so we've got, 15, 20 minutes. I want to talk to you about a few things, and maybe you've got your own list as well. Without consistent pressure on the QBs by our front seven, our secondary is going to become seriously exposed. I mean, I was watching the secondary in this game with our front seven intact for the most part. I mean, Ansah wasn't out there and so forth, but our secondary just didn't look good. And I'm afraid that if we can't get any pressure and quarterbacks have time, they're going to pick us apart. What are your kind of general thoughts about our secondary?
I am concerned. I don't think our back four have played well. The starters, the backups, it's been definitely underwhelming. I mean, clearly the talent's there.
Do they miss Earl Thomas?
Do they need guys to start stepping up? Everybody would miss Earl Thomas. It's not a question of do they miss Earl Thomas. Of course they miss Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas is the best safety in the game right now.
Did it artificially elevate that group?
I don't think so, because if you look at that group after Earl Thomas left, Earl Thomas only played four games. And then he was out the rest of the year with a broken leg. And so that gave you 12 games to evaluate everybody else. And what I do think they are missing, though, is just a playmaker, a guy that's just ready to kind of dominate a little bit, take over, really lead the group. They don't have that. The closest thing they have to it, as far as what we've seen, has been Ugo Amadi, the rookie.
And Blair, and, too, possibly.
Yeah. Blair's actually played pretty well in the preseason, but he's got this back thing going, and so I didn't want to put it on him until he's a little healthier. But Amadi's actually looked pretty good, and I want to see it's time for him to get some snaps earlier in these games and see what he does with the starting group, because I think he has the ability to elevate some of the guys around him just by just being better and being dynamic. And he has been that, but he has been that late in games against, third stringers and that kind of stuff. So let's get him some time with the starters just to see how he does, because he's probably been the best guy in the secondary over the first two preseason games.
So the first part of my observation was without consistent pressure by our front seven. So do you see consistent pressure coming this year, even with Ansah?
Without
overly exposing ourselves by blitzing, 50% of the time.
With a group that played the last couple of games, no. With Ansah in there, that will help. With Collier healthy, that will help. With Reed back from his suspension, that will help. I could see that if the group, the front seven, really the front four, providing solid pressure on the quarterback when all three of those guys are there. With all three of those guys out, which is what we had this last game, it's a struggle. Because there's just no one that looks like they're able to get consistent pressure.
I think you nailed it. I mean, we need to get those guys back. So, Russell Wilson. So, observation. Like, his play action game is totally on point this preseason. And he's only played the one game and only played, you know, a quarter. But it's amazing how accurate he is in play action. I think his play action fakes and stuff are just amazing. And the crossing routes, I thought right to left, especially to Tyler Lockett and to Jerron Brown, were pretty amazing in the Minnesota game. I mean, he was really accurate, spot on. And he's getting a tremendous amount of time too. So mm-hmm. Russell Wilson's game is going to carry this team this year, I think.
Russell Wilson with time is unfair to the rest of the league. Because we've seen Russell Wilson dominate when he's had just a terrible offensive line and he's running for his life. Now you're going to give him protection? Like, that's just not fair to everyone else. I mean, he's just too good. And if that's what the offensive line is able to give him, this team is going to be dynamic.
The offense is going to be good.
Even with the wide receivers being unproven and a lot of rookies and, you know, all of that, the offense is going to be fine if Wilson has time, because you just can't give a quarterback that good that much time. And so I'm actually really not concerned that much about the offense because Wilson and the line are playing so well. My concerns are all on the other side of the ball.
So I have to say, though, my second my other observation here on the defense is I was actually impressed with the first team defense, especially even the second team. I was impressed with the grit and the effort that those guys gave, especially in the inside, Ford, Al Woods, and then Barton at linebacker, and Kendricks, I thought, was in on like it seemed like dozens of plays. Mm-hmm. And I thought the defense looked pretty solid against a pretty decent Minnesota team, and I think our second third string offense eventually put us in positions where Minnesota was able to take advantage and score more points. But I thought our defense overall looked pretty good, Keith. And I'm wondering, your expectation this year on the defense, is it the same as last year? Is it middling? Is it like the number 15 overall defense in the NFL, or are you expecting a little more or a little less?
Right now I'm expecting maybe a little less, but it's based on what I've seen, and what I've seen has not had the best linebacker in the NFL out there, which would be Bobby Wagner. It hasn't had the team's best three pass rushers out there. In Ansa Reed and Collier. And so it's probably not a fair assessment, but I can only assess what I'm seeing. And it's a team that has a lot of good players, but other than maybe Puna Ford, I haven't seen great play. I've just seen good play. And that's not going to be enough to be more than a middling
Is
defense.
It just me, or does it just seem like the team, and especially this last game, just seemed like they were kind of walking through quicksand a little bit and going through the motions? And
especially
it
on
seems
defense.
Like a team that's really hungry, that's fighting and competing the way Pete Carroll wants them to. And quite frankly, there's a lot of different spots here up for grabs, maybe not in the linebacker group, but quite a few of other positions are available. I'm just not seeing a lot of people step up and really like make plays. I mean, Cody Barton is really one of the few, and Amadi, you know, mm-hmm. those are two guys on defense maybe overall that I'm seeing that are really kind of standing out. Everyone else is kind of just blended into this like wide view. Ugh.
It was almost like they looked at all the injuries and everything that was going on and all the guys that they were basically on the street a couple weeks ago that are now going to get considerable playing time in this preseason game, and just being like, oh, you know, well, nothing's expected of us. And they just went in with that attitude. And that's entirely, you know, what there's nobody saying that. There's no evidence of that other than it's just kind of what it looked like. And I don't know if that's real, but there was just not a lot of fire and a lot of energy. And you're right about Cody Barton. Like, that guy looks like, you know,
he's ready to go.
He's not
an
running,
NFL player.
He's not running on AAA batteries, man. They got a car battery installed on that guy. and he just never slows down. And he's been impressive. I think that has turned out to be a good pick. And Amadi's kind of the same way. He's fiery. He had a punt coverage where he split a double team as a gunner.
And oh, dude, outran, I was going to talk about that.
Outran everybody and then just made this perfect tackle. And you're just like...
That was the play of the game.
That could have been Nico Thorpe, who is a pro bowler as a special teams gunner, is a team captain on special teams. It could have been him, who's a veteran, and it wasn't. It's this rookie who's fighting for a job and did it perfectly. And just the energy and effort and everything in that play. I mean, he's like, there you go. Like, where is that with the rest of the defense?
Yes.
Give me that. Give me that level of energy. That was impressive. And I think that we are both underselling Marquise Blair a little bit. He's been good and energetic and all over the place. He just has been dealing with these back spasms that knocked him out of the game. He isn't even back on the field yet because they're still bothering him. He may not play this week and then come back for week four. But before that injury, he looked pretty good too. He looked like a guy that deserved to play.
And it's bad timing for him because Leno Hill's coming back, and Leno would like nothing more than to get his job back and make the roster. I mean, at this point, you know, we're talking about roster spots, and Leno Hill, after not playing, after having that surgery, not participating in camp at all, coaches can't evaluate kind of where he's at. This game's super important for him.
It's very important for him, although I wouldn't say that he's like at this point fighting for a job, because he beat out Tedrick to become the starter at the end of last year. He was the presumed starter coming into camp because of that. Yes, we had
and
a couple of rookies coming in.
Keeps five safeties.
Yeah, because they like having extra safeties because of their special teams ability. And last year they did. I think they kept six and they traded for Luani at right when rosters were being set, because they wanted an extra safety who could play special teams. And Luani's a great special teamer, and he's a guy that doesn't get a lot of he doesn't get a lot of traction at safety, even though that's his position, because we like talking about the rookies and, you know, the guys we know and that kind of stuff. But it's not like Luani has been terrible when pressed into action. He actually looked pretty good last year. And so what is he going to be this year? We haven't really seen a lot of him other than on special teams. And when he has played on defense, it hasn't been terrible. It's not
said we'd keep five. So yeah. McDougald, Thompson, Blair, Amadi, Hill. That's it.
Yeah. And if they, in order to, for a guy like Luani, someone would have to get cut, or someone would have to get hurt, or they would keep six because they want the extra special team guy. But I don't know if they do that because of the way cornerback looks right now, where they're not sure who's going to play and you know, who's going to be ready and all of that. So it looks more like 5-5 rather than the 4-6.
Well, it's definitely going to be a great conversation after the third preseason game. I think next week we do have to do a show around that. That would be great. Mm-hmm. Finally, the game Saturday. The most important part of this week. Third preseason game, Los Angeles Chargers in Los Angeles. Phillip Rivers, quarterback. He hasn't played yet this preseason. They don't know if they're going to play him in the third preseason game. Melvin Gordon, their running back. Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, wide receiver. Derwin James was a guy I would be really looking forward to as a fan. He's not going to be there. He's got a broken foot. He's out 4 months. Crappy situation for Derwin James. Probably one of the best rookies last year and probably one of the better players in the NFL in his second season. Joey Bosa, defensive end. Nasir Adderley, we both liked him in the draft this year at safety. Jerry Tillery, defensive tackle. I think the Seahawks were eyeing him in the draft, and he didn't quite make it to them. Russell Okung, guy we're familiar with at offensive tackle. Melvin Ingram, defensive end. Casey Hayward, Desmond King at corner. Brandon Mebane. The list goes on. They're pretty loaded. I mean, you can't really go through a list like that with the Seahawks and come up with a big, huge, you know, recognizable name list like that. These guys have a lot of talent. It'll be kind of fun to watch them play in the preseason. They'll bring everything they've got in the preseason game three. We will too. So it is a dress rehearsal type of game. Question though, Keith, what do you want to see in this game? I made my list, but go ahead and tell me just off the top of your head, what are you kind of looking for?
What I'm looking for in this game is for consistency. I mean, this is the game where you're going to get a lot of the starters in. Like I said, you should see more starters in this game than the other three preseason games combined. So I want to see the offense just be consistent, move the ball, look sharp, basically do what the starters did last week against Minnesota, but do it for a longer stretch because they're going to be out there longer and just look sharp.
It'd be nice to score some red zone touchdowns instead of field goals.
You know, we'll see how that goes. But I mean, it's just a chance. Like, I just want to see the group do that. And I want to see the defense come together a little bit more. Playing against a very good San Diego team, provided everyone on San Diego plays, which it looks like they won't. Because they're going to, why would you play a guy like Phillip Rivers in a game like this? Who's been around as long as he has. And is so important to your franchise.
Unless he wants to get some reps. He may.
And he might, but even then, you're not going to play him the usual half plus one series that you would normally do. He'll take a series or two just to get a couple of reps and get out there and you know, play the game at the right speed and all of that. But
that's right.
I think that he is a guy that he's just a really good player. And I think that if he played, then I think the defense would have a nice test. He's not going to play. So they're going to be playing against the backup. And that's going to allow the defense to hopefully show a little bit of, you know, what they can do and, you know, what kind of team they are. Because if they can't step up and stop a San Diego team being run by a backup quarterback, we may have a long year ahead of us.
Well, they've got some pretty decent quarterbacks in there, so we'll see. A couple of guys in there that, you know, I don't have the list in front of me, but I was just reading something about their backups, and their backups are actually pretty decent, so it should be a good test for Seattle. So drilling down just a little deeper than the kind of the overview stuff is I wanted to take a look at a few key matchups because there are definitely positions up for grab on this team. And I'm talking about the Seahawks, at wide receiver. Like, the wide receiver list is still really long, Keith. We know Tyler Lockett, Metcalf, and Brown are locks. Moore is a lock. After that, it gets wishy-washy. So the top four are locks. Team's likely to keep six wide receivers. They could keep five. You got Gary Jennings is looking for some playing time and looking to make an impact. He's only been able to do it in practice so far. Hasn't shown up in a game. Keenan Reynolds, we mentioned earlier. Understand Malik Turner is having a really good camp, solid. Hasn't really stood out in games yet. I think he didn't play against Minnesota. He's a guy that I think the team is probably higher on than maybe some fans are. John Ursua, another guy, Keith, that's looking to take that, probably that fifth or sixth spot. That team, I think, is pretty high on him. So I'm not sure if he has still a ton to prove. Terry Wright played really well, I thought, against Minnesota. Not as far as what he, how many balls he caught and so forth, but I thought he did a good job running routes, blocking for running backs and on special teams. That would be the way that he would possibly make the roster, at least try to make the practice squad for the team. Amara Darboh apparently is playing in this game, Keith. I'm not even understanding exactly why yet. And then Jazz Ferguson. Jazz Ferguson, everyone seems to think, took a little step back against the Minnesota Vikings. So he may want to come down and step up and see if he can get some sort of a red zone target, maybe make a touchdown. I think the team is looking at him as kind of a red zone kind of guy that could impact that sort of role on the team. And so I think they may give him an opportunity down there and see what he can do. And then the other group I was looking at, it was the cornerback, specifically at the nickel. We talked about this a while ago. You kind of made a prediction last week that Akeem King, the team may like him well enough on the outside and trust him enough to step into that role, and then have Griffin slide over into the nickel when that happens. That's certainly definitely still possible. The team's also looking at Taylor this week in a starting role at that spot. Mm-hmm. And then Kalen Reed, I think, is a guy they still like. I'm not sure exactly what happened last week, but it looks like he's now on the outside looking in. So I want to, and then we've got Amadi, who I think you and I are in agreement. I think eventually this year he becomes a starter in that role. Now, is it week one or is it week seven? I don't know. But so I'm really interested in kind of watching those things. And then, you know, the consistency, I want to see Leno Hill come out and be able to play and have a good game, not get injured again. Geno Smith, backup quarterback. Now, we were all kind of giving Paxton Lynch his moment. That kind of went away. Some of that wasn't his choice, obviously. Geno Smith, though, is back. In the outing, the first outing, I thought he looked somewhat inconsistent right off the gate. Maybe it was a little jitters. Maybe it wasn't. He wasn't comfortable in the offense yet. This game, though, I want to see him do a solid job, like in that backup role. Take the reins, don't get the jitters, run the offense, make plays, don't make any mistakes. That's what I want to see from Geno Smith. If the team, if he doesn't deliver that in the game, I think we've got some serious questions, questions that we will have after the game that we don't have today. So I think it's imperative for him to have a good game. Any thoughts?
Yeah. I'd like to see Geno Smith have a good game. I think he's going to get the opportunity to. I mean, Wilson's going to carry the load in this game, being that it's the dress rehearsal game, but then Smith should finish out the rest of the game. And he's going to do it against not the non-starters of the Chargers. And if he can't move the ball with any kind of consistency,
But look at the offensive line we're going to have in at that point.
True.
That's what worries me a little bit.
And so there's a little bit of that. So you're going to look at all of it, and I want to see him just command the offense, right? Do what he did. In the first week, the first game, people were like, he was kind of unimpressive. Okay, but what I saw from him was that he ran the offense with a certain pace and a certain confidence. He got the guys to the line of scrimmage. He made the calls and the adjustments at the line, and he didn't look tentative.
But it's after the ball is snapped, Keith, is what counts.
Yeah, but at the same time, he didn't look tentative in any of that, and Paxton Lynch has. And to me, that's that level of confidence and that level of ability to just come in and command the offense is something that you don't usually get in a backup quarterback. And if Smith can continue to provide that, it gives him the edge over anyone else. And yeah, if Smith goes out there and throws a couple picks and looks terrible, and this is a team in the same position they were in last year where they traded for Brett Hundley because they didn't believe they had a backup quarterback on the roster, and they don't want to be in that position. They signed Lynch, they signed Geno, they brought in two guys, both once highly regarded, that are fighting for opportunities. And the hope is that one of them will prove to be a good enough, capable backup. And you don't want to see them both fail. That would be a really tough spot to be in.
Yeah. I mean, it would force us to go outside the organization to find somebody, mm-hmm. I don't know that they are impatient as they were last year, throw away a draft pick guy. Basically he didn't take a snap. I think they would be more patient this year, wait until cuts and then see what they've got, because I think they would be comfortable enough going into the season with Geno Smith for a couple weeks if they had to, and then figure it out. But we'll see. I think that's it. I mean, let's go play the game. Third preseason game. No injuries. Knock on wood. Let's get everybody back healthy. Let's see some guys turn out, have some standout games. Let's get Rashad Penny the rock a little earlier in the game this time. I don't even need to see Chris Carson. Let's just put Penny out there. See what he can do with the number one offensive line and quiet the critics or not. Let's figure it out, though, now in the third game instead of the fourth game of the season. Let's get Russell Wilson out there for a quarter. I mean, this whole rule about having him play for, you know, the full half and then, at the beginning of the third quarter, I don't think we need to follow that. Let's get Geno Smith the reps. Let's get him out there with the decent offensive line in the second quarter and see if he can run that offense properly. Get guys he's been throwing to in camp, the second, third, fourth receivers out there, a chance to catch balls. Yeah. So anyway, that's it. That's all I got. That's all we have this week. Next week, we'll come back and we'll do a kind of a roster prediction show, it sounds like. And that'll be great. And that'll be fun. And the week after that will be the third annual regular season prediction show. That's always a great, great time, too. So thanks for joining us again. Thanks, Keith, for the conversation. Awesome, as usual. And we'll see you next time. Follow Keith on Twitter at MyersNFL. I am at NW Seahawk. The show is at Hawks Playbook, and HawksPlaybook.com has all the podcasts archived, iTunes, Google Podcasts, CastBox, all that good stuff has all the shows. So until next time, Keith, go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Hey, Hawks fans. Thanks for listening to the Hawks Playbook podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio and listen to all of our shows on HawksPlaybook.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at Hawks Playbook. Bill is at NW Seahawk and Keith is at Myers NFL.